produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, The Growing Truth About Cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, artists, and Normal staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about the show at our website, stash.normal.org, and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. Visit www.redaphid.com. It's Wednesday, March 19th, and it's 4:20 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. You can make a difference in the fight to end adult marijuana prohibition. Join up with the dedicated, hardworking activists of the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws at norml.org. Also, if you have a product that you would like to market to the cannabis community, you can advertise on the Daily Audio Stash. Your ad will be focused on exactly the customer base you're seeking out, the thousands of responsible cannabis consumers who download and listen to this show. Our listeners are educated consumers who want to support the businesses that support the growing truth about cannabis. And we deliver the advertising freedom you won't find on radio, TV, or print ads. To advertise on the Daily Audio Stash, send us an email at stash@normal.org. Now, Wednesday is Cannabis Science Day on the Stash, and coming up after the news, we're separating the stems of propaganda from the buds of truth with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Today, we answer your questions about marijuana and parenting in our Pass the Stash contest. What do you tell your kids about pot? Learn how to talk to them with Dr. Earlywine's new book, Parent's Guide to Marijuana. Then, Cannabis Carrie has unearthed a singer-songwriter named Yuya Joe, performing his song Ganja Wise, a nice reggae rock tune for our musical break. And we end our show today speaking with Chris Crane, the executive director of Students for Sensible Drug Policy, who just returned from Vienna, Austria, and the International UN Conference on Narcotic Drugs, or as I call it, the International Drug Czar Convention. So welcome to the show. Sit back and relax with your favorite strain and enjoy your normal daily audio stash. Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our normal daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines. Breaking news. New Hampshire House passes decriminalization measure. Concord, New Hampshire. House members today defied expectations and passed a bill to reduce the penalties for possessing small amounts of marijuana. The vote was 193-141, overriding the recommendation of the Criminal Justice and Public Safety Committee, which voted House Bill 1623 inexpedient to legislate last month. Sponsored by Representatives Jeffrey Fontas, Democrat of Nashua, Andrew Edwards, Democrat of Nashua, and Charles Weed, Democrat of Keene, House Bill 1623 makes possession of up to a quarter ounce of marijuana a violation punishable by a maximum fine of $200. The bill makes the punishment for marijuana offenses more proportional to the offense and protects offenders from the harsh, often unintended consequences that can stem from a conviction, said Fontas. These consequences can include the loss of student financial aid, he said, making it more difficult for young people to recover from what often amounts to a stupid mistake. Quote, how can we expect young people to get back on the right path if we take away every opportunity to do so, he said before the vote. If we are so concerned about the message we are sending to young people, I can think of no worse message than that we don't want our young people going to college. End quote. The bill now goes to the Senate. Wow, that's great to hear that New Hampshire has passed the decriminalization bill. But seriously, the bill was sponsored by Charles Weed? Chuck Weed sponsored the bill to decriminalize marijuana? That's kind of funny. It would almost be like if there was scientists named Blow, Fried, and Earlywine issuing research on cocaine, marijuana, and alcohol. What? There are scientists named Blow, Fried, and Earlywine, and they did issue research on cocaine, marijuana, and alcohol? This is a funny business sometimes. Border Patrol checkpoints near Yuma, Arizona nab hordes of pot users headed back from the beach. From the Phoenix News. The Border Patrol has used dogs at its checkpoints for at least 2 decades, mainly for the purpose of detecting human cargo. But since late 2005, the number of Yuma sector agents has risen 55% to about 850 agents, up from 550 as of January. Augmenting those agents are hundreds of National Guard soldiers who are part of a 6,000-troop border protection plan called Operation Jumpstart, ordered by President Bush in mid-2006. The number of canine dogs has also increased to more than 30, up from 4 in 1999. The animals are trained to sniff out hidden human beings, marijuana, cocaine, methamphetamine, heroin, and meth-related drugs such as ecstasy. These days, the checkpoints on eastbound Interstate 8 and northbound Arizona 95 near Yuma, a passageway to the I-10 and I-40 corridors linking Arizona and California, are open 24 hours a day, and with the addition of 7 times more canine dogs, they have become the biggest weed traps in the country. Drug-sniffing dogs at some of the checkpoints, especially ones south of Tucson and through Texas, find literally tons of marijuana being smuggled from Mexico. But the Border Patrol and other law enforcement officials in the Southwest report that no checkpoints in the United States bust as many small-time marijuana users as the ones near Yuma, Arizona, on I-8 and Arizona 95. Well, you know, the Supreme Court ruled that roadside drug checkpoints are unconstitutional, so now the prohibitionists are getting around that by using these so-called immigration checkpoints. Now in the United States, if you're within 100 miles of the Canadian or Mexican border, you'd better be careful driving around with any weed in your car. And isn't it good to know that your taxpayer dollars are diverted to placing the National Guard and Border Patrol cops on the freeways to stop vacationing tokers with a small bag of pot? Israeli research shows cannabidiol may slow Alzheimer's disease. From Inside Israel. The initial findings of a study at the Hebrew University of Jerusalem show that a non-psychoactive component of cannabis may hold out hope for slowing down the progression of Alzheimer's disease. The research, still at an early stage, indicates that memory loss, the first and primary symptom of Alzheimer's disease, can be slowed down significantly in mice by cannabidiol. Alzheimer's disease, the most common form of dementia, affects some 24.3 million people worldwide. Although the findings look promising, Professor Michalam warned that Alzheimer's patients should not use cannabis itself because THC, the psychoactive ingredient in cannabis, could have the opposite effect and have damaging effects on the memory. Oh boy, well, it sure looks promising that cannabidiol would be something that could help people with Alzheimer's, but you know the way they're looking at this is to strip out the CBD molecule and process it into some sort of barcoded profit-laden pharmaceutical. They always say something about not using the raw cannabis as medicine. And the strangest thing is that the studies all show that the only effect on memory caused by THC happens while you're intoxicated, and that even the heaviest THC exposure only slightly affects the formation of new memories. But nevertheless, it's good to see this research coming out of Israel.
And now, a message from President George W. Bush to remind the American people of our responsibility in our nation's war on certain American citizens, non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
That's right, America, use less drugs. Put down the Prozac, the Vioxx, and the Levitra, and turn to the herb. Use less drugs. Our national policy is no longer just say no. It's now just slow down.
Hi, this is Allison Holcomb, Director of the Marijuana Education Project at the ACLU of Washington, and you're listening to Radical Rust on the Normal Daily Audio Stash.
All right, as you know, every Wednesday on the Stash, we'd like to meet with Dr. Mitch Earlywine, who's an assistant professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany. And Dr. Earlywine, welcome back to the Stash.
Great to be on the show.
We had had our contest of Paths to the Stash here, where we were going to give away a copy of Mitch's book, The Parent's Guide to Marijuana, which is now out in paperback. And you can get links to that up on our website at stash.normal.org. We were asking for questions from parents out there who might be having difficulties talking to their kids about marijuana. So we've got the three questions, who are now all winners of the book, and we'll just go through and ask these questions and get Dr. Earlywine's perspective on them. So we start off with a question here from the Smiths from Anytown, USA. I assume a pseudonym here. And the question is this, Dr. Earlywine, thanks for all your hard work for Normal. My question is, what is the best way to educate our son about pot and still let him know that he shouldn't tell people that we smoke? I want my son to understand that this is something that adults do to relax, but not all adults do it, and that some would turn my wife and me into the law if they found out. I hate how hypocritical it sounds to tell my son that there's nothing wrong with it, just don't tell anyone. What's the best way to cover this issue without destroying his respect for the police? Your advice will be greatly appreciated.
As you can imagine, Russ, this is a complicated one, and of course the Smiths know their son better than I do, so I don't want to pretend like I've got the perfect answer for every child in every town in the world here. But the bottom line is there's a number of folks in law enforcement who have comparable ideas about the drug war to many of us. And if you happen to point out the folks from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, who have a wonderful website, and folks like that who realize, hey, this is not our top priority as far as law enforcement is concerned, I think that lays a nice groundwork for how you talk about cannabis with a child along these lines. The other big issue is just trying to make sure you're doing things in a really responsible way so that they can really see that this is not a problematic form of use, but something that people can do recreationally without any negative consequences. And then you're under basically an obligation to then be a good example for them in order to make these kinds of things work. And then how do you request, you know, a secret in your family from a child? That's always a difficult topic, and I think it's going to vary with age and with the sort of strength of your relationship, if you will. I think there are other things in families that people tend to keep private, and drawing that private-public distinction about what's in our family and what's outside our family is a good thing to have in a number of different domains. And if you've laid that groundwork on other topics, a lot of times this one can be an extension of that. I think the key is always going to be more about asking questions and listening than about actually saying anything. And if you can get them to sort of share in the dilemma with you if they're old enough, say, wow, well, I'm in this predicament here. I really understand how these laws are wrong. I'm actually doing things in order to change them. How can I get you on my side with this? Because we know there are dangers, legal ones, about this behavior. What would you recommend? And then letting them engage in the dialogue with you, they'll come up with things that you might never have thought of, and then suddenly you're really strengthening the relationship, not just having a talk about cannabis.
Well, that would be the ideal situation. I imagine it must be a tough tightrope act. On one side, you've got to, you know, express to your children that what you're doing isn't something they should fear on that side of it. But on the other side of it, you don't want them to be too lackadaisical about it and just blurt something out at school that might cause some prying eyes to be focused upon the family.
That's it exactly. And I think the opportunity is there, again, for letting them problem solve with you because I think that they're often much more aware of what are the situations that are relevant, where can this become a problem, and then working it out together. Again, I realize this isn't very specific advice. I wish there were some magic words that I say, oh, you just say this and it happens. But, of course, if that were the case, we wouldn't have this question be one of the winners.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, I think the important thing to emphasize there is just the opening up of the lines of communication. I've heard so many stories of people who didn't have any sort of conversation with their children about it, tried to keep it secret and not mention it at all, thinking that the kids wouldn't notice, and then the kid, you know, inadvertently, you know, says something about it, and then that invites the authorities to start investigating. So definitely open up the lines of communication with your child.
Absolutely, and kids are a lot smarter than we give them credit for. I'm stunned at how much insight the kids in our neighborhood and some of my daughter's friends and people like that have into their family process that the parents really don't realize. And I think that there's really something to be said for giving your children as much credit as possible and realizing that they probably know a whole lot more than we might even guess.
All right. Well, let's go and take a look at another question that we have from one of our winners here on the Pass the Stash contest. This person asks, Dr. Mitch, I am a 22-year-old who is concerned that my parents aren't giving my younger brother the appropriate idea about drugs. He is 13, and they just gave him the just-say-no excuse and left it at that. No facts, no reasons. I don't want to throw their authority out the window and impose my morals and thoughts, but I don't want him to be misinformed. I've discussed this with my parents, who know I'm a stoner, but nothing more has been said to my brother. What can I do? And that's B.B. Joe in Vermont who asks that question.
I love this idea that a big brother would be concerned about a younger brother and wanting to make sure that he gets the facts about this topic, and I do cover quite a bit of this stuff in the book, The Parent's Guide. I think the key here is, again, asking questions rather than making a whole lot of statements, not just with your brother, but also with your parents. So the idea that we can open up this as an inquiry, as let me talk about what I think are the key issues for teens more generally, having it be this broad topic, and that this is just one category in a bigger discussion about what's it like to be 13 in your town, and then letting the parents say, you know, their side of it, which is often, hey, we had this discussion once and now we're done with it, which I'm afraid to say is just an oversimplification of the issue, and then making sure that your brother really understands the negative consequences of cannabis use, particularly early in life, things that I elaborated on in the book, but potential problems with IQ, an increased risk of dependence, the potential for a deviant brain development, and then making sure that he's got a whole lot of alternative behaviors, a lot of fun stuff that he's involved with that can be a wonderful buffer against early cannabis use and the development of cannabis problems. So is he involved in sports? Does he play a musical instrument? Does he enjoy a bunch of other activities? Is he connected to a religious community or any other sort of environment where he gets to shine, have a great time, and not necessarily develop crazy ideas about drugs, but be essentially buffered against any of the early use problems? That would be the way to go. And it's interesting because you can do this in a very indirect sort of way. It doesn't have to be, okay, now we're going to sit down and have this important talk. It's often literally 30 seconds at a time of asking questions, going back and forth, and then seeing what kind of information he's gotten already, and then sort of filling in the gaps with the information that you have or the information that you will have from my book.
And we don't want the 22-year-old, the older brother here in this circumstance. Are we trying to say here that we don't want him to undermine the parents by, you know, directly contradicting what they might say? Is this like he needs to just stay away from the topic, or like you say, just, you know, help his younger brother to, you know, have the positive qualities that would help him avoid any problems, but still leave it up to the parents to make the decisions what they want to tell him about marijuana? How does one determine how far to go in that circumstance?
It's neat because a lot of times you can provide novel information to a younger sibling without it having to be counter to what mom and dad say so much as in addition to. So mom and dad have said, just say no. And you can say, well, just say no is a great place to start, but it often hasn't worked. So let's walk through some other things that might go on, right? And then you suddenly can get into some drug refusal skills, some ideas about leading a full life, and how just say no is an oversimplification in your mind. What does he think about it? And then you get the chance to not contradict your folks so much as build on what they said and say, wow, you know, I think there's a little bit more to it. And then it's not me against the parents so much as I'm going to add to the things that they've started with.
Kind of like mom and dad weren't wrong, but let me fill you in why they were right.
Exactly. And I feel like you can even draw a nice distinction between your view and their view, as there's a whole lot of ideas about the world, and now you're going to figure out one for yourself. Let me give you my input, too. And then it becomes their own idea, so that the younger sibling says, oh, I'm figuring this out for myself, not here's what my brother told me, here's what my parents told me.
Hmm. Yeah, that's great advice. I love that. Well, we have one more question here, and this one begins, hi, Dr. Earlywine. I love your segment on the stash. I'm a college student, and my parents know that I am a cannabis user. They are both very conservative and totally buy into all the reefer madness that's out there. My mom is a nurse and tries to tell me that it makes men's boobs swell up and is twice as carcinogenic as cigarettes. My dad still thinks it's a gateway drug. They pretty much leave me alone because I have proven myself responsible about it, but I would like to know, how can I get through to them and help them to see it's my safer choice as a responsible adult to smoke cannabis? Thanks, man. LG from the South.
This is so funny because it sort of makes me think, Russ, that I need to write another book called How to Talk to Your Parents About Pot. But the bottom line on here is, it's funny because the data do not support any of these notions anymore, and I went through some of this in the Parents Guide and in more detail in Understanding Marijuana. The gynecomastia, this idea that men's boobs are going to grow from smoking cannabis, is based on this one deviant case study that came out in the 1970s, and I mean, nobody could possibly believe that anymore. That's just a hoot. And I think the gateway theory and things along those lines that we've talked about on the show before requires some detailed discussions with folks. And I wonder if, you know, the goal is to change their minds or to just have them be more accepting or what. And a lot of times they respond well to actual data. So there are studies out there. Will your parents believe that? Only you'll know for sure. But a lot of times asking about, say, the 100 million Americans who've tried cannabis, and yet there are fewer than 10 million heroin users in the country, how does that fit a gateway? And letting them kind of walk through and getting the cogs turning about some of these things, if they're interested, is the way for them to come to their own conclusions and realize, hey, this isn't exactly the way we've been taught. I love that the mom is the nurse, too, and still has some of this misinformation. It sort of lets us know that even in health services, the cannabis research is not widely known. And then this is an opportunity for him to basically get involved and start being more and more educated about cannabis use, and then knowing which questions to ask, and then sort of how to lay these data on the parents under these circumstances. But clearly, I need to lay this out in another book.
Yeah, How to Talk to Your Parents About Marijuana. We'll be looking forward to that one. And I always just have to remind them that the only thing that causes that has the correlation between cannabis and men's boobs swelling up is getting stoned and eating too much Chunky Monkey ice cream. That's going to make you swell up all over and all in the chest as well. So that's probably where that notion came from. Well, Dr. Earlywine, thanks for answering all these questions from our readers out there. And again, if you want to send a question in to Dr. Earlywine, the email address is 420research@gmail.com. We'll perhaps have another contest sometime in the next month, but we want to congratulate our three winners, and they will be receiving a copy of Parents' Guide to Marijuana, the new book from Dr. Mitch Earlywine. You can also receive your own copy by purchasing one through the links at our website at stash.normal.org, or you can get the information on the book at amazon.com, where you can order it for yourself. Dr. Earlywine, thanks again for joining us here on the Daily Audio Stash.
Thanks so much, Russ.
Georgia, Hi, this is Willie Nelson, and I need your help. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 20s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stop arresting law-abiding citizens because they prefer marijuana over alcohol. Nearly 2,000 Americans are arrested every day on marijuana charges. We're unfairly destroying the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands of people each year simply because they smoke marijuana. These are not criminals. They're average citizens like you, good neighbors who work hard, raise families, pay taxes, and contribute to their communities. We need your help to end marijuana prohibition once and for all. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
Here at the NORML Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take the time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. Has the middle of the week got you feeling like the weekend is too far away? Well, here is Yuya Joe to save the day with his musical hit, Ganja Wise. This sweet, easy-feeling reggae rock song will give you a lift. Yuya is from Toronto, Canada, and he lists his big three influences as Dylan, Lennon, and Marley. From his Give You Everything album, this track's message is delivered with a purity of its own. You can check out his MySpace page for more music and information. We'll have a link to that up on our blog at stash.normal.org. You can also learn more about the artists on our show by visiting music.podshow.com and download the MP3 of this tune from our website. This is Yuya with Ganja Wise.
Some call I a Joseph, child like a Rasta Joe. Used to be Joe College, if you really must know. Ja love make I smile, Ja herb make I grow. Listen to Ja music, I and I do know. The solarization of the means of production equals the detoxification. Biosphere regeneration of the global economy. Brought to the table by none other than she. Yeah, that is the root that she bears. That is the fruit that she bears. And she gone ganja wise. Ganja wise. Gone ganja wise. Ganja wise. Gone ganja wise. Ganja survive. Gone ganja wise. Ganja alive. Ganja gonna win through thick and thin. Ganja gonna win. Ain't never been a sin. Gone ganja wise. Ganja alive.
All right, we're happy to have here on the stash Chris Crane, who's the Executive Director of Students for Sensible Drug Policy in Washington, D.C. Check out their website at ssdp.org. It's the place you want to go if you are a college or a high school student and you want to know more about drug policy and what you can do to make a positive change. And Chris, thank you for being here on the stash today.
Thanks for having me.
Well, really excited to talk to you about what the conference you were just at. You were at the United Nations Committee on Narcotics Drugs. Is that the way they pronounce that there?
That's correct. It's the United Nations Committee on Narcotic Drugs. It was their annual meeting that was just recently held at the United Nations compound in Vienna, Austria.
So we have representatives from all around the world coming to this conference. And what was the general theme of this conference this year?
Well, I mean, basically, just to give you a sense of what this is really all about, every year, representatives from, or delegates, I should say, from just about every country in the world are go to Vienna for this Committee on Narcotic Drugs annual meeting, which is sponsored, I believe, by UNODC, the UN Office on Drugs and UN Office on Drugs and Crime. It's for the most part, a big dog and pony show. I mean, the delegates from all the countries get up there and get to give speeches about how wonderful all of the international anti-drug treaties are, you know, how great everything's working in their country, and how it would just be, you know, that much better if they had more funding and more money. There were a few choice moments. There were some delegations there that tended to disagree with the majority that made things a little bit interesting. But for the most part, it's really, it's justice ministers and folks from the equivalent of the Office of National Drug Control Policy. There were actually people from the ONDCP there and, you know, the equivalent offices in other countries. And those are the people that represent the delegations at the CND meeting. So it's not exactly a conference per se as much as a meeting. And it would hardly be considered a reform-friendly environment.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds a little bit like the International Convention of Drug Czars or something.
Essentially, that's exactly what it is, yeah.
Now, who was it, which of these delegations were actually contradicting or in opposition to some of these things? Which you mentioned
that. The strongest opposition, at least stated opposition, actually came from the Bolivian delegation.
Oh.
Bolivia's, I believe it was their justice minister, but I'm not 100% certain on that. He got up and gave a pretty scathing indictment of a report that the United Nations released a few weeks ago. This is their INCB, the International Narcotics Control Board, which is an unaccountable branch of the United Nations, released a report, and part of their findings were that South American countries should ban the use of coca, even chewing coca leaves, by populations in South America. Now, the Bolivian government, being run by Evo Morales, who himself comes from the indigenous population of Bolivia, and his government reflects that, are fairly pro coca. This is the chewing of coca leaves is something that's been used for hundreds, if not thousands, of years in South America, well before the Spanish arrived on the continent. And it's used basically like most folks use coffee. It helps keep people awake while they're working during the day. So the Bolivian delegation was not too pleased at all with the INCB's recommendations, and issued a pretty scathing indictment of those recommendations. And when the chair of the CND tried to silence them, he actually erupted in a chant of "Viva la Coca," which pretty much infuriated most of the people there. But it was pretty nice to see.
Wow, that's quite interesting, and it's amazing that this is happening down right south of us in Bolivia, and these leaders like this, and probably most people in America wouldn't even recognize the name Evo Morales or what's going on down there. So it's good to know that this word gets out through other channels, at least.
That's right, and it was great to see that side of things represented amongst a crowd of people that like you said, it was kind of a meeting of international drug czars. I will say though. I was quite interested in what the United States delegation was offering up there. During this whole process, the delegates have the opportunity to introduce resolutions that will be adopted by the CND. Now these are completely toothless resolutions. There's no real methods to enforce them or whatever, but the resolutions tend to reflect the priorities of the member states. Now the big issue that the United States delegation, or the biggest issue that the United States delegation seemed to be promoting as far as a new international norm in drug policy was the issue of drug testing. Hmm. In particular, the issue of student drug testing. They introduced resolutions which promoted the use of drug testing in the workplace and at schools. They spoke about it when they got to speak to the entire delegation, and in fact, I have in my hands right now a booklet that the U.S. delegation was handing out called "What Works: Effective Public Health Responses to Drug Use," it lists six different so-called public health responses to drug use. The first thing that they list is the anti-drug media campaign, essentially the propaganda ads that have been shown by the government's own studies to increase drug use rather than decrease it.
Right.
One of the other recommendations is drug testing in schools and in the workplace. So it's very clear that over the next couple of years, and this is important going into 2009 when the UN reviews their previous 10-year drug strategy and crafts another strategy for the next 10 years, it's very clear that the United States is going to be pushing very hard for the adoption of drug testing in both the workplace and schools as a new international norm in anti-drug strategies.
Mm. Now, the other news of note that came from the conference this year was blogged about on our normal blog at blog.normal.org, and this was about the UN's the head of this organization here, Antonio Maria Costa, who appeared there and gave a speech where, well, you were there for the speech. Why don't you just tell the listeners what he had said?
Sure. Well, Antonio Maria Costa, who is he's the head of UNODC, the UN Office on Drugs and Crime. He addressed the conference, the convention twice, and during his second speech, which was actually, ironically, his second one was to all of the NGOs, the non-governmental organizations that were there, not to the general delegation. But he addressed the fact that he spoke last December at the Drug Policy Alliance conference in New Orleans. At the time, we give him a lot of credit for showing up. I mean, essentially, Antonio Maria Costa is the United Nations drug czar. He's the highest-ranking anti-drug official in the entire world. He did accept the invitation to come and speak at the Drug Policy Alliance conference. I thought that showed a lot of courage on his part to do so, to come into an environment that may not be entirely friendly, and engaged in a spirited discussion there. Now, I think the audience was extremely respectful. There were a couple times when they booed some things that he said, but for the most part, they were very respectful and cheered and tried to find some common ground. Well, we thought that was some real inroads, that we made some real inroads, but when he addressed this NGO forum at the CND meeting, his quote, I believe his direct quote, was that, "I had the opportunity to speak to he called it the Drug Alliance, the Pro-Drug Drug Alliance Conference in New Orleans, 1,200 people, 1,000 total lunatics, 200 people worth talking to, the rest obviously all on drugs.
Oh, yes, yes. That's five out of six, right?
That's right. 1,000 people at the New Orleans conference, all on drugs and complete raving lunatics. Mm. That would include just about anybody who works in drug policy reform, who works in harm reduction, who advocates for policy change or at the state, local, national levels. This is basically the entire drug policy reform community. He dismissed all of our considerations and all of our concerns by saying, well, they're obviously all on drugs. So I thought a lot of the goodwill that he gained by addressing the Drug Policy Alliance conference and coming there and trying to have this dialogue was pretty much lost by categorically dismissing anybody who's interested in seeing any sort of reform as clearly on drugs.
Yeah, those kind of ad hominem attacks usually come from someone who's losing an argument. So in a way, maybe
that's absolutely correct. And clearly, I think he is losing this argument, and that seems to be the way that. That people are increasingly seeing things. And when I met with folks who represented non-governmental organizations from all around the world, not just the United States, but somebody like Mike Trice, who's the former British drug czar, who's now advocating for drug policy reform and common sense drug policies, and is working with governments around the world through the International Drug Policy Coalition to enact more sensible drug policies. So clearly the world, and in particularly those of us who are in the nonprofit and NGO community who work on this issue on a day-to-day basis, are seeing that the way we've been doing things is no longer working. We need to come up with some new approaches, whether it's ending prohibition altogether or enacting policies even within a prohibitionist framework that are more sensible, that respect human rights, that respect human dignity, and don't necessarily treat drug users as subhuman or criminals. I think that there's becoming more of a consensus around the world that that's the way we need to go, and people like Antonio Maria Costa are having a very hard time facing that reality.
This is Chris Crane, the Executive Director from Students for Sensible Drug Policy in Washington, D.C. Chris, thanks as always for visiting us here on The Stash.
It's always a pleasure being here. I'm happy to come back anytime.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you with today's cannabis quote from the UK Royal Commission on Drugs in 1969. Quote, "Having reviewed all the material available to us, we find ourselves in agreement with the conclusion reached by the Indian Hemp Drugs Commission and the New York Mayor's Committee, that the long-term consumption of cannabis in moderate doses has no harmful effects, the long-asserted dangers of cannabis are exaggerated, and that the related law is socially damaging, if not unworkable." End quote. Thanks for downloading the Audio Stash. We'll be back tomorrow with more news and information you can use. Until that time, take care of each other.